I'm curious, do you have a really great BS detector? Maybe you're often skeptical of others. Are you really street smart? Would you say you're pretty self-assured? You often find yourself being the leader in the group. Maybe you even struggle to ask for help. Do you love a good challenge? Do you fight really hard for the causes you believe in? Do you have a great sense of humor? I bet you're a blast. You might have thought that these were all parts of your personality, but they might actually be coping mechanisms you've picked up over the course of your life, and they're having a huge impact on how you show up, especially on this motherhood journey. Are you curious to know more? You got to take my personality patterns quiz. Here's what's going on. When you were a child, whenever an experience overwhelmed your nervous system, you subconsciously built a defense against that overwhelm. Over time, those defenses became a habit, and then they became a pattern. And now as an adult, what we think of as our personality is often this defense pattern running the show. It's so interesting, right? There are 5 different personality patterns, and they're not personality types like the Enneagram or the Myers-Briggs, but rather they describe the safety strategies that we immediately go to when we start to feel overwhelmed. They don't describe who we are so much as what's blocking who we are. The good news is that once you take my quiz and learn about your pattern, you can learn skills to break out of that pattern, and then you can live and parent your kids as your true and authentic self. Click on the quiz link in the show notes or go to michellegrosser.com/quiz now to take my 2-minute personality pattern quiz. What's up, you guys? Michelle here. If you are listening to this episode and you find yourself feeling tired, are you wondering if it's like, I need a nap and a snack kind of tired? Or are you experiencing burnout? If you're wondering, right, if what you're noticing about what you're feeling, and maybe you feel like you've been tired for a while now, and you feel like no matter how much rest you get, you're still feeling tired and kind of edgy or irritable or just feel like you're dragging, I want to invite you to check out my brand new private podcast series. It's called Heal Your Burnout. I made it specifically for you guys. It's completely free, and it's a series designed to be a launching pad to understanding and healing your burnout. I made 5 episodes for you guys. They're short, they're actionable, and in the first episode, I really teach you about some of the signs and symptoms of burnout. There's 3 different stages of burnout, and I think when we get an understanding of one, the signs and the symptoms of each stage, it can be, first of all, just so encouraging and confirming, because a lot of times we know we're feeling off. We have our labs run, we see professionals, right? Everything comes back within normal range. And we're like, am I making this up? Like, I just feel so off, right? And it can be really encouraging and really validating to know that, one, it's not all in your head. And 2, there are plans for healing, right? You can heal burnout. So check out episode 1. I walk you through the 3 different stages of burnout. I give you all the different symptoms so you can really get a good gauge on where you're at, because it's so important to know where we're at so we can create a plan for where we want to be, right? 5 different episodes there. I talk about burnout. I talk about the symptoms of burnout. I talk about what's going on in our bodies and in our minds when we're experiencing burnout. And then the last couple episodes, I really give you awesome practical handles for starting to heal your burnout that you can put into place today. Things that are mind-body based that will directly influence your mood and your energy and your sleep and your stress, everything, your overall health and well-being. So check it out today. There's a link in the show notes. Go ahead and listen to this private podcast series, Heal Your Burnout. Welcome to the Calm Mom Podcast, the show for ambitious women ready to get off the hot mess express. I know you've got a lot going on. You work so hard. You're raising an incredible family. And sometimes it can be overwhelming. I'm your host, Michelle Grosser. I'm a certified master life coach, attorney, wife, and mom. And years ago, I was right where you are. I was running a busy law practice while raising a family, and I was on the fast track to burnout. I thought I just needed to be more organized or have better routines, but it was learning how to heal and regulate my nervous system that expanded my capacity to gracefully hold more of this big, beautiful life. You too are worthy of an extraordinary life in and beyond motherhood. Learning to be a calm, anchoring presence in your home and at work is going to be your superpower. If you're here to do the inner work that brings a sense of calm amidst the chaos, I'm here to join you on that journey. Each time you press play, your growth continues. So let's get at it. Welcome back to the podcast, you guys. Michelle Grosser here. Today we have a conversation about our personal finances. And I'm so excited to take this turn on the podcast because we talk a lot about our nervous system. We talk a lot about anxiety and overwhelm. And I think very oftentimes our finances can be rolled in to all of that. If we are experiencing anxiety about our finances, if we're living in a state of scarcity, that can impact the regulation of our nervous system. If we are feeling overwhelmed or underwater because of our finances. So today I'm bringing in Shinobu Hindert. She is a certified financial planner. She's a money expert. She's a best-selling author. Her book's called Investing is Your Superpower. And she's a first-generation American. She's had firsthand experience navigating the financial industry from a career perspective and personally to build wealth. She's worked for some of the largest financial institutions in the U.S., and now she takes all that knowledge and she has created simple, proven methods for teaching personal finance. She's delivered over 500 live workshops ranging from a wide variety of topics. She teaches about budgeting and estate planning, but her goal is really just to simplify the complex world of money and the complex world of investing by empowering people like you and like me everywhere so that we can all reach financial freedom. So I'm so excited for you to listen and learn in today's conversation. We're going to talk about how we can really prioritize taking care of our family finances, how we can prepare for the future, why it's important that we start investing as soon as we can. And really, I love her approach because she really empowers us to be empowered by our finances instead of being intimidated by our finances. So enjoy this conversation with Shinobu. Shinobu, welcome to the Calm Mom Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Michelle.
Awesome. So I read your bio in the intro and introduced you a little bit. But before we start talking about all the things we're going to dig into today, I would love it if you just let everyone know a little bit about who you are and the work that you're doing and kind of what you're here to teach us about today.
Yes, thank you. I'm a certified financial planner. So essentially, I just have a ton of background in financial planning and taxes and retirement planning, all the things to do with money. And I'm a mom of two small kids and live in Southern California. I really created this business because when I transitioned away from my job, to help with my firstborn, there just was so many questions that came flooding from people that I knew that I don't know what it was. It's like they knew I stopped working and they're like, oh, you must have a lot of time. Let me ask you all of the financial questions I have. And the conversations were great. They kept me really engaged in that part of my life because I was missing it. And then it was like, well, where do I go now? And when I would really try to research and find resources for them to follow up on, I could send them to sites, I could give them some good information, but I realized there's no curriculum out there. Yeah. So you're clicking on things. A lot of the kind of free education that's out there, there's a ton of pop-up ads, and it just kind of gets distracting from what you're really trying to accomplish. So that's when I started my business to really educate people. So kind of simplify the complex world of finances, especially when it comes to investing, and have people be able to make informed, confident financial decisions was my goal and continues to be my goal.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. You're filling an important space, I think. Before we kind of jump into some of your tips and advice, I wonder if there's anyone listening who's like, oh, well, you know, in our home, we like divide and conquer, and my husband's the one who handles our finances, or he pays all the bills, or whatever it is. And maybe they think that this episode is not for them, or that it doesn't apply to them. I would love to hear what you would kind of say to them and your thoughts about how involved we should be or how much we should know or how much responsibility and accountability we should take for our family's finances or for our own.
That's a great question because as, you know, I was a financial planner for over 10 years. And as I sat in that seat, a lot of what you do see are women coming in that have lost their husbands or women that are going through divorce and they're overwhelmed or they're also frustrated that they're like, I can't believe this is the first time I'm really trying to do anything with it. And it took them a lot to walk through that door because a lot of steps happened beforehand that are psychological. I remember I had one client who it was at least over 5 years that she just hadn't dealt with it when she had lost her husband because it just brought up trauma, anxiety, and she had a pile of financial statements just sitting there. And one of her friends was my client. And so she had been talking to her for a long time. So even just to get her to come and meet. And by the end of it, when, you know, we really helped her out and sorted everything out, she was like, I can't believe I was just stuck in this cycle of not being able to take any action. And it was scary for her. And she was a PhD marine biologist who would go out and measure the ocean floor for months at a time. So she was a highly educated woman. And I think that kind of knocked her confidence down a little bit too. It was like, how come I can't do this on my own? How come I can't get myself to take these steps? So I think, you know, that the statistics are out there. I think there's a 90% chance that a female, an American woman, will be solely responsible for her finances at one point in her life. Mm-hmm. So whether that's through longevity or divorce or, you know, sometimes women get involved when they realize their spouse has made multiple mistakes that have been costly. And oftentimes when I was meeting with couples and, you know, a woman might say, oh, he handles this and he does the investing. And I would dig into those questions and he'd be like, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I'm not trained in this. I'm just doing it because like she thinks I can do it. And I thought maybe I could do it, but I actually don't know what I'm doing. And I think having that vulnerability come up too, you know, just to ask honest questions. But I think with, you know, rents being really high, with mortgage rates being at a 20-year high, food costs, gas, I mean, everything is just expensive right now. It feels that way. I think I'm having more organic conversations about the cost of living right now than I ever have before. Yeah. So I think the more you can be aware of money, of how it's working, what the impact is, you know, the better off you're going to be. You're not going to be in bad shape if you learn about money, you know, let's put it that way. So even if you don't want to be overly involved, I think having a sense of that involvement also gives you some empowerment. And the more you do it, the less sensitive you are to it. So it's like anything else, you're building that muscle. And I think the primary goal is just to, if you don't like to deal with it, is just to desensitize yourself to it. So it starts to become a habitual thing and then it doesn't really bother you anymore. And you use them as building blocks to learn for more advanced topics going forward.
Yeah. Just like, I guess anything else that's new, right, to us as we like start to dip our toe, just getting the reps in.
Exactly.
So I think that's so interesting because money is probably one of the most like triggering topics for a lot of people. It's just, we have so many stories I think tied up. And I know even for myself, like it's something that I've been really working through, like a lot of the stories and just paradigms and mindsets that I hold around it. And I think for a lot of women, like this is, it's called the call mom. A lot of women hold anxiety around their finances or just money in general. The thought of even talking about it or like letting someone else in and take a look at your numbers can feel really vulnerable. So before we kind of jump into it, what are some, like, I just love the idea of getting reps in and it being like a muscle, but what are some other mindset shifts you kind of offer or invite to people to be like, hey, this is not actually as personal as it might feel, right? It's not like an indication on how smart you are or how well you're doing or all of these different things. These are just numbers that tell a story and I can help, right?
Yeah, I think sitting down, and I talk about this a lot in the beginning chapters of my book, because we all have these stories. We all have these things that we tell ourselves about money, whether we're conscious of it or not. So it really going through that thought process and identifying what are your you know, triggers that you have inside of you. What are the roadblocks that I call them that you kind of put in place? And sometimes people end up saying, you know, especially when they're faced with an investment decision, if they're meeting someone, maybe they don't know that well, and they're giving them some, you know, advice and they're like, well, I don't really want to do this. they're like, oh, my gut was telling me not to do it. You know, and in like your gut works in other situations, you know, maybe you don't cross the street on a busy street. Your gut's like, don't do it. You're not going to do it. But when it comes to your finances, you really want to unpack that. Yeah. And say, well, why is my gut telling me that? And oftentimes it's, you know, maybe you don't trust the person that you're talking to. So the solution isn't to shut it all down. It could be a great financial solution for you, but it doesn't feel good. Like, find somebody else to work with. Maybe you need more information about what that's going to look like. How do you like to receive information? I had clients that loved data, right? They'd be like, I want to see all the spreadsheets. And I had other clients that were like, spreadsheets give me anxiety. These numbers give me anxiety. I just want to know, like, what does this look like in the end? How do I get there from today?
Yeah.
So really finding out what your financial personality is like and uncovering, is it a limiting belief that you have? Are you overconfident about your financial situation and decisions? Really understanding what that is, and then finding a way to, in a process, and I really do it in three steps. Like, number one, like, acknowledge how you're feeling. It's legitimate. Good. It's coming from somewhere. The second thing is to replace anything you're telling yourself with true statements instead. So instead of saying, like, this is my gut telling me not to do this, like, that's not, maybe that is quite true, but you might just say, I need more information before I can make this decision. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing is find a way to move through it. If you need more information, is that you, you know, finding a financial professional that you can trust? Is that talking to your partner about it? Is that talking to, you know, a mentor that you trust that you want to? But find out, what are those three steps for yourself? And you might have different emotions that come together with this. And once you do that, it's just practicing. I'm confronted with this uncomfortable situation, identifying what feels uncomfortable, and then work your way through it. So even though I have, you know, now close to 20 years experience in this field, I get really uncomfortable making huge financial decisions because of my backstory. My whole money story is all based around fear. Yes. So if I'm making a big decision, you know, one, I think it was during COVID, I had to get my lease was up on my car. And I didn't traditionally lease cars, so it was kind of a new thing for me. And I went to the dealership and they're like, okay, well, and I was going to buy the car. And they said, well, we could give you the same car, but brand new, and we'll lower your payment $50 a month. And I'm like, okay, yeah, because if I were to purchase the car, my payment would have gone up like $200. Right. And with technology these days, I'm like, I don't even know that I want to buy this car. So it was logically, it made sense. And I had such a hard time making that decision. And I talked to my husband and he's like, this makes sense. Everything's staying the same. They're just lowering your payment. You get a new car. We don't have the issues with the radio anymore or whatever. And I had to send him a text while we were there. And I was like, I feel really uncomfortable, you know, and he just like took me aside. We talked through the numbers, like everything still made sense. But I, for the rest of the day, I still had a pit in my stomach. And I was like physically hot, you know, I could see like I'm sweating a little bit, then it would go away and then I'd get uncomfortable and, you know, and like maybe didn't sleep the best that night. Nothing crazy. I was already doing what I was doing and it wasn't a stretch. But for me, if I trusted my gut, which was to tell me not to do it, that probably wouldn't have been a good decision, you know, to then turn around and buy a car I didn't really want. And that would have been totally, totally different scenario. So I think just understanding that it's okay that you have feelings around money. We're all human. Everybody does it, but finding a way to work through those, because as we get older and we have to turn the assets that we've saved, all of this kind of nest eggs that we're building into an income source when we're retired, that's really scary.
Yeah.
And you need to be able to flex those muscles that you've been building to say, I trust this person that I'm working with, or I know what to do. I just retired. The market crashed, but that's okay. This is the third time I've seen a market crash in my lifetime. Here's what I know I should do based on either mistakes I've made in the past or what I know works. So we have to really kind of dive into the deep end right now and just get comfortable with working with money, because we don't have a robust pension system here. Like, Social Security is not going to replace 80% of your income. Like, it's up to us to do that. And we need to learn how to work with money now.
Oh, so good. I hear so much in that story too, of like getting curious about whether it actually is our intuition or it is just that fear speaking, right? Because sometimes they can sound the same. And it's like, is this actually my gut or is this just fear? Okay. So for women listening who have, like, this is a whole new world and they're even listening to this, like, that's their first kind of flexed or like, okay, I'm going to do this. Or maybe it's someone listening who's like, listen, we're living paycheck to paycheck. Like this seems like a step that's like 10 steps ahead of where we're at right now. What are some like good introductory first steps that anyone can do regardless of where they're at right now?
Understanding where you're at, looking at how much you're spending, especially if you're living paycheck to paycheck, to take a look at where the money's going every single month. There's apps that you can use that can track that for you. And to just kind of see what are the general rules of thumb that you should have. And, you know, it's generally about no more than 50% of your income should be going to, you know, your essential type of expenses, and for people to look at that. And if it's not possible right now, try to look for how you can change that. Because if you just keep doing what you're doing, then it will never change and you will be in a tough situation. It might require moving. It might require people getting a second job as a temporary means to filling in those gaps, but really seeing like, what am I spending? Where is the money coming from? And then how can I start saving money and or maybe paying down debt a little bit more, even if it's minimal amount, but just, again, it's that exercise of actually doing it, because then it's going to become habit. It's going to become routine. And in the future, the dollar amounts will get larger and it won't be the first time. I often hear people say, I will save when I have more money. I'll start investing when I have more money. But so many companies out there now got rid of the minimums. They got rid of all of the barriers to get into saving or investing, to just start it, even if it's a minimal amount. So you can see like, well, where did I open the account? What do they offer? Like, are they charging fees? Like, just to understand how that realm works is just to really jump into the deep end.
Yeah, I think it's so easy for us to even bring up those excuses again because just of fear, right? Like it's like low hanging fruit for us to say like, oh, I'll do it when I have more money.
Well, and it's kind of a pain in the neck, right? Like you got to open an account, to put all your personal information in there, you have to like link stuff up. So if we're busy and we're done working, it's like, I want to go play. I don't want to go and do homework on the side. And I think that we have to make time for it because like you have to ask yourself, if I'm not making time for it, who's making time for it for me, you know, and if you don't have anybody that's just going to write you a blank check later on, like you need to do this yourself.
Yeah. And what's the power in starting now? Like we always hear this, or not always hear this thing, but like that saying about the oak tree where it's like the best time to plant an oak tree was 20 years ago. And the second best time is now. I feel like that applies to our finances and our investing and our strategy as well. Like, is it as big of a deal as people make it out to be to like, just get started, start now, because time is so powerful as it compounds.
Yeah. I mean, that's life changing if you look at the numbers of what that is. I mean, even when people are, you know, 50 and they're saving, you know, double what they could have saved when they were 40, they still aren't able to catch up to people that started with less amount because of the compounding growth. So when you start making money on your money, then you're still contributing, but then that starts to take off, you know, over time. And that's really where you're leveraging what you have. So you are making without physically doing anything else. Mm-hmm. So the more you could just get involved and put any money in. And that's why many people in their 401ks or retirement plans have most of their assets in there, because they're putting it in there. It's just growing. They kind of forget about it and they continue to put money in there and it compounds over time versus other monies we have outside. We're maybe spending or we're not investing right away. So yes, that is very true. The sooner you could get started, the better.
Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about maybe some tips or just like better strategy in that balance between, you know, all of our short-term daily, monthly expenses, just making sure our family functions, and then also making sure that we're being intentional about setting aside enough, in the big picture.
Yeah. I would look at, you know, setting a goal of 20% of your income away. And whether that's a mix of putting money in your retirement accounts or just saving that. And for many people, right off the bat, they might be like, well, I can't do that. And that doesn't mean you stop trying. That might mean, okay, right today, maybe you can only do 5%. But then in 3 months from now, see if you can increase that by 1%. And then in 3 months from that, increase it by 1%. But set these little goals for yourself. you want quick wins when it comes to anything with your money, is you just want to build that momentum, like feel confidence and go, okay, I did this. I want to do it again. And the more people that I work with, it's really funny to see people that haven't been saving or investing that much start. And then, you know, I see them later and I'm working with them and they've like turned it into a game. Where they're like, oh yeah, look at my accounts. I save this much and I'm doing this. And I'm like, I can't believe how you're the same person. You're so excited about saving, where before, you know, I'm kind of like the bad cop. It's like someone's coming to work with me. They're like, oh, I need to work with you to my finances. You know, I'm like going to the dentist is like working with me. You know, like people are generally not starting that excited. And at the end, it's like these total transformations that you're seeing, that they're excited about it. They feel really empowered by it, which is the whole purpose of what I'm doing.
Yeah, I love that. I can't help but think when you mentioned that a lot of your money stories are kind of rooted in fear, or you're kind of growing in that awareness. Would you be willing to share any of that? Because I think for a lot of us, if we have an aversion to like dealing with our finances like this, or if going to see someone like yourself feels like the dentist, I wonder if like how much of those stories we have, we're just not even aware of like what the root of that anxiety is. But a lot of us probably do share similar stories just in our upbringing and what we experienced.
Yeah, I think just sitting back and asking yourself, like, what was the language being used around money in my house?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think even with my own children, of problem solving is like, are they using optimistic language? You know, are they kind of like, I can't do this, or this is so hard, versus like, I'm going to get better at this, or I'm trying really hard. Or, you know, my daughter will be like, this is hard, but I'm not going to quit. You know, she just says, I'm like, oh, so if I'm like, you know, find myself complaining about something, she's like, Mom, you just got to do it. You just got to do it. And then you will do it. I'm like, okay.
That's good advice. Cool. Wise one.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. But I think exploring mine, you know, my dad had lost his parents before he was an adult and was really on his own for a lot of financial decisions that he had to make as a young adult. And it obviously really stuck with him. And he had children when he was young, and he came from Africa to the United States and was kind of working, living paycheck to paycheck, just trying to make it. And so he was always just like, we don't have a lot of money, or you're going to run out of money, or what if I die and you're alone, you don't have any family, you know, in the country. And my mom was from Japan, and he's like, her family doesn't even speak English. So it was just like fear that he had of like, if we die, there is nobody here to take care of you. And I, you know, looking back, I'm like, very poor parent planning. I'm sure there was things we could have worked out, but that was his fear, that he wanted me to know how things worked. So I was always aware of how much, maybe not exact dollar amounts, but how much money they made relative to what we were spending. And I knew, like, when could I ask for new shoes? When was it not appropriate time for me to do that? You know, I remember there were times where we had trouble paying the heat bill and wake up for breakfast, and like, I would literally put on winter clothes and eat breakfast. And it was like, not a conversation. It was just like, this is the way that it is. So I, as when I started working as soon as I could, and I began to hoard money, and I would take money that I would make in cash and I would hide it in drawers. And, you know, as a child, or I guess, you know, however old I was, you don't realize there's something wrong with that, or there's something different about that. That's not how it should be. I was like, oh, something bad's going to happen and I'm going to need this. And apparently I needed to hide it. I don't know why I was hiding it, but I was hiding it from somebody.
Keep it safe.
And it just stuck with me, you know, just through the years. And I was always just afraid. And I was afraid of being, you know, an orphan and being poor. And it was just something that stuck with me. So as I became an adult, it wasn't like I just undid all of those things. It really drove a lot of decisions that I made. So I think for you to, you know, I have clients that I've worked with that don't like to talk about money because their parents fought about money. They separated because of money. So they're like, I don't want to talk about it, especially if there's contention with a spouse. They're like, this is not, like, my spouse shuts down, I shut down, we don't do this. So finding ways to work through that, or just understand that that's your starting point. Once you understand your starting point, you can build on that. But first, like, recognize where you're coming from.
Oh, so good. For the women listening, I'm just kind of curious, for women that come across your desk, if there's kind of a trend or a theme in like things that you help explain or teach them that women, like woman after woman, just seems to be surprised by or caught off guard by, or like has these light bulb moments. If you could share, you know, maybe one of those that you're like, okay, women need to hear this, and they seem surprised when I teach it to them.
I think the investing component of it is like, it's not that complicated if you boil it down to what you need. You know, I think understanding that your purpose of investing is not to become a financial professional.
Right.
That's not what you're trying to achieve. You don't need to know everything, but there are key things that you need to recognize and start to participate in the market and watch it grow. And it depends on what investment experience they have. Sometimes when you're starting at a company or you start investing on your own, you literally pick something random. There's not a lot of thought that goes, that's how I started. You just buy anything and then you're like, ah, this isn't doing well. The market stinks. You know, just having them understand that we have over 200 years of market history data and information. We've seen hundreds of different market cycles within there. We understand how market behavior really works. And, you know, in the last 43 years, the market was positive 75% of the time. Within those individual years, I think the average fluctuation is around 14 to 16%. So within a year, you could see it swing negative down or go all the way up. But to understand 75% of the time, it will return positively. But that means you need to be invested. You can't be jumping in and out or, again, like waiting till tomorrow, really just getting started. I think when women understand, oh, it's not gambling. I'm not just throwing my money randomly at something, but you have to have thought behind what you're purchasing. And that's really what I break down in my book is, what are all the other portfolio managers doing? What are the professionals doing? How can you copy that? And then how can you copy it to fit your lifestyle so you're not doing this on a daily basis? What does that look like? I think once people understand that, they're like, okay, let's get in. And then again, it starts to become this fun thing that they're participating in rather than shying away from it.
Yeah, we can gamify it and kind of make it more fun. I love that. Tala, I want to hear more about your book. So tell us all about it. Is that it sitting behind you there that I'm seeing?
Yes, it's okay, awesome. Called Investing is Your Superpower. And really just the whole purpose is to help people understand how to leverage their money. So we're not just like working harder. It's like, okay, keep working, but also have your money work for you when you're sleeping. But essentially I outline three different characters for people to follow their journey of every concept that I teach. How are they applying it to their lives? Cool. So you can see examples and kind of build on that, see if there's similarities in your own situation, but also how are they applying each of these concepts? So it's essentially taking people that maybe haven't done too much of investing in the past and getting them to create budgets around what's working for them, really create all of these goals. Because if you're not just focused on retirement and you're not retiring in 5 years, there's a lot that we may want to do. You're going to need new cars in your lifetime. You're going to want to go on vacations. You're going to maybe have a home that you own. You're going to want to save for retirement. There's going to be so many. Maybe it's paying for your kids' college. There's lots of different goals that we have. You can do them all. You just need to have a plan around them. And that's really what I help people outline is what's on your wish list. How are we going to get there? Let's run some scenarios. I provide tools for people to be able to do that to see, okay, if this is how much money we need in X amount of years, well, then how much do I need to be saving? Well, what if that's invested? Like, what are all these things? How does this all work together? And at the end of the day, somebody might read half of the book and be like, wow, this is so great. I'm not going to do this myself. Like, I need to hire someone. And I talk about that too. Like, if you don't want to do this, here's when you should look to hire someone. Here's the kind of company you should be looking for. And that's totally appropriate, but at least having that knowledge, I think, a lot of feedback that I've received is the people that go out and hire a professional, they feel really confident going into those conversations because they know deeper questions to ask. They can pinpoint a little bit more specifically what they're looking for, and they don't feel like they're walking in there and like, I don't know what I'm talking about. And I felt like maybe I was getting talked down to, or he suggested something and I was afraid of it, so I said no to it. Really going in there with a solid knowledge base to be able to ask what you're looking for.
So that's so empowering. It's awesome. We will link that in the show notes for you guys. But let everyone know where else they can find you if they're interested in hearing more, learning more, working with you. What are you offering?
I would head over to my website. It's empoweredplanning.com. I'm working on a YouTube channel for just all of the education and the content that I develop for other outlets, just housing it kind of just in one place for everybody. The book would be a great place to start. And then I teach a course that's based on the book, which is really fun. So I think just heading over to the website and seeing where your interests lie.
That's awesome. Is the course online? Like, is it a digital course?
Yeah, it's a digital course based off the book.
Awesome. So you guys could do it from anywhere. What a great first step. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. This is great. And I really appreciate your time and the work that you're doing.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
If you love Mommy's Podcast, leave a review.
If you enjoyed this episode, it would be so awesome if you could take a moment to subscribe and rate the podcast. And if you have just a few more seconds to leave a quick review, they really help to get this podcast out to other moms like you. I read every last review, and trust me, when it's late at night or early in the morning before my kids get up and I'm working on bringing you all of this content, your reviews are what keep me going. Leaving a review is truly the best way you can thank me. And of course, DM me on Instagram. I love to hear from you. Thanks for listening to another episode. Head over to the show notes for this episode and all past episodes at michellegrosser.com, where you'll find free resources and more ways to connect with me. If you love the show, share it with a friend. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you next time.